things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah!
That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Sorry, I only get congested when we have to record.
That's all right. Hi.
Hi.
How are you, Jenny?
I'm good. I feel so far away from you, Taylor.
I know. We're like more than like an arm's reach away with our new table.
We do. We have a new heirloom vintage antique.
It's beautiful. Very handcrafted and stuff. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. It's gorgeous. So we're really just moving on up in the world.
Heck yeah. Did you have a good day?
Sure. I'm a little fucking depressed.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's gonna get worse.
Yeah. Well,
so
this is cathartic to me, which I might be twisted, but that's why we created this podcast, because right. This is how like you and I unwind.
Uh huh. I met my quota for upsetting middle-aged white men today. So.
Oh, thank God. What's that, 100, 150?
Yeah, roundabouts. Mm-hmm. And I upset them by having thoughts and opinions of my own.
How dare you?
I know, it's a scandal. So, I can't wait to tell you about this absolute asshole cult leader.
Oh no, is it another white man?
It is a white man.
Typical.
Yep. And he's just awful. So, you're gonna tell me yours first.
I am. My cult is, strangely, another white man. I will say that, in my usual fashion of being completely unable to follow even the simplest of directions, this is more cult adjacent.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Than like an actual Kool-Aid cult.
Okay.
As it's officially considered a religion.
Well, you know what? It's actually really funny.
Hmm.
We made this podcast, so we got to make up our own fucking rules.
Oh, fuck yeah.
So we're gonna do whatever we want.
We are 7 minutes in. We've already said fucked four times.
This one is gonna be a little F-bomb heavy. I'm gonna tell you right now, just because mine is absolutely horrible.
Mine's just horrible. Bizarre.
Okay.
You've given me teasers about yours, and I'm excited to hear it. So we're gonna get through the light side of the cult first.
Light side of the moon.
Yeah. Okay, beige Floyd.
Okay. That's my new nickname, and I will not be called anything else.
Okay, you got it. A Little Bit Grim, co-hosted by Jenny and Paige Floyd.
Fits.
You probably haven't heard of this cult, because this cult, they really don't have, like, radical or harmful practices.
Oh, okay.
Unlike most cults, I'm about to tell you about the Raelians.
Okay.
Sounds like aliens.
Great.
Boy, is it alien heavy.
Yeah, I love an alien. I'm excited. You just told us about aliens.
I can't stay away from them.
They're fascinating.
They really are. So even though they don't have anything that's super radical, they do believe in some wild stuff.
Yeah.
Like the fact that aliens created and have directed the human race. Mm. Oh, and that they also cloned a human child.
Okay.
So, according to internal documents, the Raelian movement has around 100,000 members worldwide. In 1973, Claude Vorhillon.
Wow.
Sorry.
That's impressive.
I had to Google that so many times, and I'm still not right. He changed his name to Rael.
Okay.
So.
That's handy. That was kind of him.
Yeah, it is. Helpful. He was a sports car journalist.
Oh, so normal.
And a test driver.
Okay, so he's like Joe Schmo.
Just a regular French dude.
All right, I like it.
He started his new religion, which is rooted in some pretty typical schools of thought considering the subject matter of a UFO religion. Free love, sustainability, lasting peace. The whole shebang.
I can get on board with it.
See, this is how they get you.
Right.
He claims that he was abducted by aliens, taken into the UFO, and they explained how the world worked to him. These aliens, called the Elohim, were the true creators of humanity, using advanced cloning technology to create humans in their own image. When they intervened with our early species, they called themselves angels, cherubim, or gods.
Cute.
In different eras of human history, Claude claims that the aliens enlightened Jesus, Buddha, Abraham, Moses, all of these, like, big
leaders.
Big religious players, the prophets.
So basically, these aliens came first.
Came first, created us.
All right.
Gave their message to the prophets.
Okay.
And then tasked them with spreading the aliens' message that we can one day join the Elohim in space.
Honestly, not that far-fetched. I'm going to say it. I'm still okay with it.
I've heard crazier stuff.
Honestly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's going to be a recurring theme.
Okay.
Through this.
These are very, like, tepid cultists.
Yes. They're not fully committed.
No.
They're just, it's just a little strange. So, Claude said that he was taken into the spaceship. He shared dinner with the Elohim, Jesus, and Buddha.
That's a dinner I want to be a part of.
I'll take mine to go. The Elohim's goals are to make humanity more peaceful, democratic, and aware as we prepare to be welcomed into the interstellar community. So, he changed his name to Rael, started Raelianism.
Wait, what?
Claude.
Oh, okay.
Changed his name to Rael.
Okay.
Started Raelianism. And this was the whole backstory.
Reeling them in.
So soon, Taylor.
I couldn't help
you
it.
You didn't even let me get warmed up.
I thought that's what you said. So when you didn't say it, I was like, this is it.
No, this is the moment.
This is my opportunity. I'm gonna take it.
Fair. Okay.
All right.
I'll let it slide.
You're gonna let me have it.
So becoming a Raelian is actually pretty easy. You just have to formally disavow any other religion, which is pretty simple. Sure. I feel like I've done it 4 times in this podcast alone.
Yeah.
And your DNA has to be uploaded into a space cloud supercomputer, allowing for a digital reincarnation and immortality.
So do they own Ancestry.com?
They do have a website.
Awesome.
The baptisms are performed on one of the 4 major holy days in the Raelian calendar. One marks the anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima.
Wow.
One marks the day Claude had his first alien encounter. One for the day he saw the Elohim starship and had dinner with the religious guys. And one when the aliens cloned Adam and Eve, when they created humanity. A Rosh Hashanah of the stars, if you will.
How do we know what that date is?
He picked it.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
He was just we don't have a date in, like, this couple of months. Like, we're just going to stick one in it.
It's like the pagan wheel of the year.
They're just going to plop it in there.
Every 6 to 8 weeks, we need to celebrate something. People get stir crazy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We need to celebrate every 6 weeks for sure.
Yes. That's the pagan wheel of the year. Whoa.
I watched your words disappear.
Taylor, cut that out. That was embarrassing. I glitched.
Glitch in the matrix. Yeah.
So, even though it seems like pretty tame up until now, they have a few controversial beliefs. The symbol the Raelians use is the Star of David with a swastika in the middle.
Ooh.
Which.
Ooh, not great.
Like, not no. I can. There's a lot of bad ways to use the swastika. I feel like inside the Star of David is, like, probably top 3.
It's pretty problematic.
It's really problematic. Yeah.
Ooh, not a great choice.
No, not a great choice
for such a tepid cult.
No, but
can we just pick a triangle or something?
Well, their whole deal is they believe that the majority of this cult is in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So they believe that the, like Christianity, that the Jews are the chosen people of the Elohim.
Right.
So they wanted to honor them. And then the swastika, which I hate to say this, really is one of the oldest symbols on earth. It's still used in Hinduism today as a symbol of, like, peace and whatever. And then the Nazis stole it.
Destroyed it.
And now it means something really terrible.
Blech.
So, like, Just do better. It's pretty not chill to do that.
Yeah. I'm sorry, when was this guy born, like, what year is it?
1973 is around the birth of this.
So we know better.
Oh, we know better.
Okay, all right.
Everybody knows better.
Maybe it was the 20s and, like...
No.
Okay, all right.
No.
All right.
Hindus still use this symbol. It existed long before the Nazis got a hold of it, blah, blah, blah. He claims it's a symbol of peace, regardless of its historical implications. Which, like, I get where he's coming from. It existed before the Nazis, but, like, they stole it. They defiled it. So now you don't use
it. It's trash.
It's, yeah.
Like, you don't get to, like, repurpose it for your own stuff now.
No. No, this is not... Love it or listed here with the swastika.
We can't put some shiplap on it.
No, no cedar shake is gonna fix the swastika.
Got it.
So because they put a swastika in the Star of David and they're based mostly in Israel, it's where most of them live. Israel banned them from the erection of them.
Yeah.
Well, I typed that out and I didn't even know. Banned them from erecting a big alien embassy in Jerusalem.
Okay.
So they changed their symbol and they replaced the swastika with a swirl, and Israel was still like, bro, no.
No thanks.
No, you're not building your giant alien house here in Jerusalem. So they are also, aside from this, huge proponents of free love. Who isn't? Personally, I'm a big fan of letting people just, like, do whatever they want with their genitals. It does not concern me.
Right.
But some people just, you know, really don't like that.
Big opinions about it.
Big opinions. And sex and sexuality is a huge part of the Raelian doctrine. It's attracted clergy from other religions. So they have a lot of people in there. They have a ranking system that are high up that converted to Raelianism from Catholicism, Judaism.
Crazy.
Yeah, the hard hitters. They believe in free sexual liberation as well as full equality for LGBTQIA and other. They practice sensual meditation, which, take a moment of silence and just imagine what that is. And it's 10 times weirder.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not gonna... There's videos on YouTube of sensual meditation.
Okay.
I advise you after this to check them out.
All right.
It's it's exactly what you think it is.
Amazing.
Amazing. They are also loud vocal advocates for masturbation in all of its very many splendid forms. And they also got in a little bit of hot water for passing out condoms, which is one of their calling cards. They will, like... It's like marketing materials. They'll label condoms.
That is good PR.
After Dark does that.
Yeah. You gotta, like, hand out some condoms to people. You get, like, your marketing on something. Yeah. It's something people are gonna keep.
It's all about branding.
If
you want anything to take off, you have to have a strong marketing core.
So what you're saying is we're gonna put a Little Bit Grim condoms out.
Come to our first live show. We will pass out a Little Bit Grim condoms.
Come to our first show.
I hate you.
So sorry. Turn it off now.
Oh my god. You're gonna scare away all of our listeners. Taylor, we have to stop.
Listen, we only have, like, a small proportion of people who are over 34 who listen to us, according to Spotify.
Listen, people over 34 use condoms.
My parents.
Hi, Kevin and Laura.
Hey, guys.
Sorry, this is a weird one. Skip to the next.
Yeah.
So they got in a little bit of hot water for passing condoms out to the students at a prominent Catholic school in Montreal.
Oh, right. Not a great plan.
Well, we all know how Catholics feel about birth control in any fashion.
Listen, they're going to find a way.
They... Life finds a way.
We're gonna get in trouble for quoting Jurassic Park too many times during this podcast.
I'm okay with it.
Steven Spielberg, please don't come for us.
Oh god, yeah, he's a lot of money. We can't fight that in court. No. It's not gonna stand up.
We just, like, raise our white flag now.
No, bye. I'm sorry.
We're sorry.
They believe that sexual pleasure is a gift from the aliens given to humans to encourage joy. Listen. And not for procreation. That's, like, such a focal point of this, that sex is a pleasure just for the sheer point of pleasure. because the Raelian Church is a big fan of science. And they believe that GMO crops and nanotechnology can eliminate the need to work, and they can create a utopia that embraces science. And the most exciting form of technology for them is cloning.
Okay.
So I've been saying this for years. Every time somebody I know and love gets pregnant and has to have a baby, I'm like, do we not have a better way?
I like that you put it, like, has to have a baby.
Listen, babies, fine. They're great if you're a fan of babies.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like puppies are great if you like dogs. I'm saying this is 2020. We're living in the future.
Some people want to be pregnant. They, like, look forward to that as, like, a part of their human condition. And I think that's beautiful. I think that's great if that's what you want. That gives me the heebie-jeebies because I would feel so claustrophobic within my own body.
It feels parasitic.
An alien.
What? The Raelians!
Sucking out your life force. I don't like it.
I just don't.
All you moms out there, you're too brave for this earth.
You are all saints and I am beneath you.
100%.
But
we worship you.
Yeah, I really do. Because no way in hell.
No. Mm-hmm. We are not going to procreate, so, like, we need other people to carry a race on, and I believe in you.
I just need to be an aunt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Or, like, stepmom. Like, use model. Like, it's like that.
Yeah.
I'm cool with that. Don't want to do it. So, the Raelians also believe similarly. There has to be a better way. So, in 1997, Rael created an organization called Clonade. It was to aid in the advancement of human cloning. They claim that they successfully created the first human clone called Eve in 2002. However, they have been reluctant to provide any real evidence that supports this claim.
Huh.
They claim it's to protect. She's 18 now. They claim she's, like, just been a child. They're trying to protect her privacy.
All right. Okay.
You can't say it didn't happen.
Yeah. Nope.
So.
Sure can't.
No, you certainly can't.
Don't know if it did, but
you don't know it didn't. The Raelians believe that, using cloning, they can bring about immortality as well as, I love this, retroactively deliver justice to war criminals, suicide bombers, and others who have committed crimes against humanity.
Huh.
Yeah. I can get behind that.
All right, yeah.
Jurassic Park, some, like, war criminals and, like, put them on trial.
Yeah.
I'm for it. The most fun and fresh project that they're working on right now, this is, like, number one, like, modus operandi, build their alien resort.
Alien resort?
Resort is my word.
Okay.
But that's...
That's what it is.
It's what it is. They're building an alien resort. They're trying to build this alien embassy on neutral territory for the Elohims to return to Earth. The grounds will include... And there's, like, sketches of this that you can, like, go take a look at. Oof. Like, blueprints.
I love it.
Yeah. So they're going to include a giant landing pad.
For the UFOs?
For the UFOs.
Okay.
For their ships, motherships, surrounded by alien ambassador suites that sit around a huge resort-style pool with sun deck, reflecting pool, palm trees, lounge chairs, picnic areas, and a conference room.
That sounds amazing.
I want to go.
And, like, spend a couple of days there?
Listen, you just have to denounce all forms of religion and upload your DNA into a computer.
Done.
Easy.
Both.
So easy. I did 23andMe. My DNA is already in a computer.
Yeah, my DNA is uploaded somewhere.
Yeah. So, all of this is in the center of a giant campground. And it will also be enclosed in a septic sphere barrier.
Okay.
That protects the Elohim from our native Terra bacteria.
Terra bacteria.
It's like bacteria that's organic to Earth.
Okay.
That would be toxic.
I see.
Like when we brought smallpox.
COVID-19.
Yes. All of the awful things that have happened. So today the Raelians have 100,000 members in about 90 countries, most popular in Europe, Quebec, and Japan, and they have a tiered membership system, levels 0 through 6. So 0 is trainee, then assistant organizer, assistant priest, bishop, and planetary guide.
I like it. I like it. That organizer is a level of like ascension through the ranks.
Yes.
Organizer. I like it.
You just want to like hang out right there
for a while. Yeah. I'll be like, I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't need to become a priest.
You want to be head organizer.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of the whole, it's a hot dog party. Oh my God. Wait, what's it? A sausage holiday? What's it called when a group is all men?
Sausage party.
A sausage party.
Sausage holiday.
I tried so hard to be hip.
It's okay.
Whatever.
It's all right.
And what I'm trying to say is less than a third of the Raelians are female.
Okay.
Although there is a specific female only order of angels in this Elohim race. And they all openly preach about sex-positive feminism. And they have a special group of women within the organization who work in a, like, offshoot that provides support to other women in the sex work industry.
Pure romance.
Yeah.
They founded Pure Romance. And sent consultants to us.
News alert. Pure romance is a cover-up for aliens.
We have done it. We have uncovered a conspiracy.
Oh my God.
While doing a call.
Tune into the next conspiracy episode where we talk about pure romance. Anyway, so it's pretty rad that, like, even though I know for some this, like, sounds absolutely, like, wackadoodle,
bonkers. Insane.
Bonkers. It's bananas. But they actually go and they have an organization that, like, helps underserved females because they so strongly believe that sex is for pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't have to be shameful or, like, done in the dark. And they, like, work to support that.
Amazing.
Absolutely.
Overall, like, other than the swastika stuff, like, I'm going to give it a B+.
Yeah. It's pretty rad.
As far as cults go, this is pretty good.
Yeah. This is, like, 1 out of 10.
Yeah.
On the scale of cult stuff.
Yeah.
So, even though the Raelians, they're a UFO religion, they're not the only ones. And there are, Heaven's Gate is another UFO religion.
I'll cover that eventually. That is.
That's all you. There's so many facts I can't.
That is a heavy hitter. A heavy hitter?
Heavy hitter.
Big hitter?
Hard hitter?
One of these adjectives.
It's a big, fat, nasty cult.
It is blah, blah, blah,
blah. Awful.
Pretty bad.
Plot twist. They were right. Just kidding. Anyway, so they set themselves apart from the other UFO religions by affirming that all of their faith lies in scientific facts. And they don't buy into, like, scientific hoobajubu or whatever.
Non-scientific?
Yeah, like, not supernatural.
Oh, okay.
Things that a lot of the other, like, UFO religions really buy into. Listen, I'm sorry that this wasn't, like, a real big, fat, nasty cult.
Hey, that's okay. A little lighthearted.
I just think it's so interesting because it blurs the line between a cult and a religion.
Yeah.
It seems that, like, that distinction falls somewhere between, like, how much money you ask for, how much clout, and how much of a following you get. If you pay taxes, or if you're supposed to pay taxes... and I just feel like here you have, like, a non-radical, pretty much non-harmful religion. And even though there's, like, some holes, if you dig too deep into their claims, like evolution, for example, I feel like that's not really the whole point of having, like, a faith-based lifestyle.
Sure.
That it's, like, shared moral values among a group of like-minded people bound by, like, ritual and routine. And that's what the Raelians are.
Right.
And I'm, like, very happy to just let them, like, do their damn old thing.
It sounds like they're not doing any harm to anybody actively.
They're not doing any harm to anybody, which is, like, normally what you would think of as culty.
Right.
But, like, they also think aliens have manipulated the timeline of humanity and created us.
Which we do not have proof that that didn't happen.
I think that's more likely than some of the other baloney I've heard.
100%.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that's the real deal on Raelianism.
Good job.
Thanks.
Really good job. Well researched.
Hello, everyone. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Sam, and we are from the Chilled and Killed podcast.
If you guys enjoy listening to true crime while sipping on a glass of wine or two,
or whole bottle,
maybe the whole bottle, then search for us on your favorite platform. We're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Spotify, we're pretty much everywhere you want to find us.
And truly, the more wine we drink, the funnier it gets. So yep. You guys definitely want to be in for those episodes.
Yes. So yeah, we're Chilled and Killed. Search for us anywhere.
Woo!
I know that you're about to like dig deep
into
some really dark stuff.
It's about to get dark and twisty. If you don't like dark and twisty, like if you like dark and twisty at like a 7, you should probably end your day with Jenny's story.
Is it more than a 7?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It's pretty dark.
Okay.
It's pretty bad.
I love this. I feel like normally I'm the one that has to get into, like, the real nasty stuff.
Oh, no. It's pretty dark, Jenny. Unfortunately, I knew that it was going to be dark, and then 7 pages of research later, I realized that it was horrible.
We've descended from dark to horrible.
And I had to, like, go take a walk.
Oh.
In the middle of this research. I was eating my taco salad while I was eating this and had to be like, I have to finish eating before I continue research.
Oh, my God.
And I have a little bit of a squeamish stomach. Like, I can't eat and watch horror movies.
Oh, really?
No.
Okay.
I hate it. But when I was doing, like, just reading articles, I was like, what? No candy.
Okay, so what is it? You wouldn't tell me. My heart can't stand it anymore. Okay.
So this is a cult I'd never heard of. It is led by a man named Roche Terrio and his Ant Hill Kids.
His what?
Ant Hill Kids.
Ant Hill Kids.
Yes. Like okay. Ant Hill. Gross, creepy crawlies.
Do you know that there's a group on Facebook called We All Pretend to Be Ants in an Ant Colony?
Yes, I did.
It is the most wholesome group of people I have ever met in my entire life. And I know this is a very lighthearted no to start on, but go join that Facebook group.
I have seen it and I've laughed so hard and then been like, not for me, but I'm glad that other people enjoy it. No. I'm glad that there is like a little bright, shiny spot. It's, in the world
it's mine.
Of
it's
my Facebook.
Bright shiny spot. Okay, so the Ant Hill children.
Yeah. So Roche Terrio was born May 16th, 1947. He was born in a religious family in Ontario, Canada. So we're in like French Canada. So all of the names are going to be French. I will do my best, but absolutely no promises.
French is a difficult language.
He had a relatively normal childhood, although later in life he would make claims of abuse. Everything I read and researched basically dismissed these claims. Like, even as a child, he never complained about anything. Like, nobody saw any marks on him or anything like that. And it wasn't until later in life that he said that he had this, like, really horrible childhood. He dropped out of school in 7th grade and began to study and memorize the Old Testament. And this is when his obsession with the end of the world began. And it just kind of goes downhill from here.
Oh, well, we started off so high.
We started off high. It goes downhill, downhill.
Rapidly.
Downhill.
Oh, God.
In the late 1960s, Roche married a woman and had 2 sons. During this time, he began to have really, really terrible stomach ulcers.
Oh.
The ulcers had to be fixed surgically, and he had complications from those surgeries. The persistent discomfort of his digestive system fostered a certain irritability on Terrio's part, and he also became obsessed with medicine. He taught himself a great deal about anatomy.
No.
Yep. He moved his family to Thetford Mines and began developing his skills with woodworking. He became involved in municipal politics and joined the French version of the Shriners.
Ooh.
He used this as his personal platform for a parody of Catholicism, which is what he was born into, like a really religious Catholic family.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the Catholic roots of all the other members, he continued to kind of just parody Catholicism. He also acquired a new interest in sex and sexuality, one of which is not entirely appreciated by his wife or in-laws.
What does that mean?
I mean, he was just very interested in, like, sex outside of his marriage.
Oh!
He also began drinking heavily at this time.
Okay.
Yep. He started to have affairs with other women, and finally his wife, she knew about a lot of them, and finally, like, one of them, her name was Giselle, and she was just like, I'm done with this. So when his wife left, he converted from Catholicism to the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Oh.
The Seventh-day Adventist Church believed in living a holistic lifestyle free from tobacco, alcohol, and unhealthy food.
Well, it sounds great when you phrase it like that.
Yeah. Interesting for an alcoholic. not going to be a great time. You know what I need?
Not alcohol.
Yeah. Not going to be a great time. His enthusiasm for God's work began to unsettle the other Adventists. So you know that it's getting a little bit cray.
If the other religious zealots
are like,
whoa,
this is weird.
No.
His boastfulness irritated those who knew of his limited education. So he wasn't shy about telling people he dropped out of school at seventh grade, but he just had such a confidence and cockiness about him that everybody was just like, why are you acting like this? And they were very annoyed by him. Roche became fascinated with the Old Testament once again. He became really obsessed with its strict codes and of masculine authority. He was also fascinated with the apocalypse and its message of violent retribution for sin in the end of times and the division of the human race into the elect and the reprobate? Maybe, yeah.
I don't know.
Sorry, I copy and pasted that part.
That's okay.
By the mid-1970s, Roche became convinced that he was the people's savior and started convincing people to leave their families and jobs and join him in a life of simplicity and freedom.
This is the pinpoint of a cult.
Yep.
This is the difference between a cult and a religion.
Yep.
Leave everything behind and follow me, your new lord.
Yep. Not a good idea. Just, like, stop there.
Right.
Hard stop.
You're gonna, here's my thing, you're really gonna attract people who already have, like, unsavory home lives.
Yep.
Or people who are, like, not standing on solid foundation, or, like, their spirituality or their morality. All of those people are going to want a fresh start and follow somebody charismatic.
Yeah. So they'll do whatever he wants, because he's giving them, like, the attention and the love that they've always wanted and never had.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just gonna follow him wherever he goes.
So many lost people.
Yeah. This original group was comprised of about 10 adults. Of course, most of them were women.
Yeah.
His original rhetoric was that his commune would be a place where people can live and think freely and listen to his teachings. They opened a clinic in...
Uh-oh.
Quebec. It was like a place just outside of Quebec. But they opened a place called the Healthy Living Clinic, an alternative holistic center where you can get organic food and literature that would help cure any ailment.
So unassuming. It's a co-op.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has that store.
Yeah.
In your town.
Yep.
Yeah.
And with, like, such a generic name, like Healthy Living Clinic, like, nobody thinks twice about that.
No.
It's not like...
We have, like, 4 within a 3-mile radius of us right now.
Yep. Yep, they all smell the same, you know?
Yeah, it smells like...
organic smell.
It smells like Palo Santo, mugwort, and moss.
I don't think I like it.
I
a lot of the patrons of the Healthy Living Clinic actually either joined the group or made big financial donations to the group.
It's a not-for-profit.
Yeah. At this point... kind of a weird dynamic took over the group. So all of the women were competing for Roche's attention.
Why? never, why do we have to, never compete for men's attention. It's basic economics. Things that are abundant have low value.
Yes. So, one woman, Giselle, the woman that he ended up, like, being caught, his wife caught him with her, she was still a part of this group, and she actually proposed to Roche, because she was like, I'm just gonna, like, take care of this, 1, 2, 3, he's gonna be married to me, and then all of this will stop.
Wrong.
Wrong. They were married, but for Roche, it was just really to show the Adventists how sincere he was in his religion, that, like, no other women meant anything to him. He was a good stand-up man. He's going to marry this woman, and everything's going to be great.
So he's still tangling with the Seventh Day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. He breaks off from them pretty quickly here.
Okay.
Of course, they didn't buy it. They were just like, you're fucking weird.
Was he... How you have to be so extra super duper weird
for the Seventh Day Adventists to think you're weird. I will show you a picture of this man just so that you can have kind of a get his face in your head here.
Oh, okay.
So please hold.
Taylor, play romantic love songs while you pull up this this handsome fellow. Taylor, play creepy carnival music while you look up this fellow. No.
Please describe this human.
There's more forehead than face. And there is four times as much beard.
It's all very pointy.
And it's very pointy. It's a perpetual scowl.
He's an unpleasant looking fellow.
I would say that I would venture to say it's more than unpleasant. He's an unnerving.
I would walk on the other side of the street if I saw him walking toward me.
This is the kind of guy where you see him at a bar and you pick up your phone and you pretend like you're on a phone call with your best friend.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, no.
So, that's Roche.
Oh. I would also like to mention, if this makes any difference, he's like an especially fuzzy man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Game of the heebs.
Yeah, big heebs.
Okay, so the Adventists actually approached the women to try to convince them to leave. Like, these guys were like, something is seriously not right here.
Oh, no.
But their loyalty was so strong to him, and they didn't leave. They didn't go anywhere.
I just don't understand, like, the charismatic pull of... I mean, I guess I feel like every woman has been in, like, a somewhat toxic relationship with a man, and you...
Yeah, and if you're with 10 other women that all have the same mindset of you as you, like, technically you outnumber him.
Yeah.
And so you could say, like, no, girl, it's gonna be fine, like, we're just gonna stick it out, and then we're gonna find, like, the Lord's way or whatever.
He's
like, they don't have, like, a whole lot of family tell them, like, I love you and you're important no matter what.
And this is painful already, and I feel like we haven't even scratched the surface.
No, there is a point where you think that it's over, and it's not.
Oh, no. False bottom.
There is an actual false bottom here. I'll warn you when we get there so you don't get too relieved.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
So in March of 1978, a woman named Geraldine Eau Claire was admitted to the Healthy Living Clinic. She had been undergoing treatment for leukemia in Quebec City, and things seemed to be going well at the hospital, but Eau Claire's husband had fell in with Roche. Roche convinced Mr. Eau Claire to let him visit Geraldine in the hospital, where Roche got into a loud argument with doctors over the matter of Geraldine's treatment, particularly the amount of drugs that they were giving her. Roche convinced Mr. Eau Claire to check in the 38-year-old cancer patient, or to check out the cancer patient out of the hospital and into a Healthy Living Clinic.
This just made me go from 0 to 100 so quick. That hurt. That hurts my heart.
Oh, yeah.
That having somebody in that situation... Am I about to feel an emotion?
Are you going to have the
tears? I might have one.
Okay.
But somebody in that situation is so vulnerable. Mm-hmm.
And they want to believe so much.
So willing to cling to any hope that you give them that you would pray off of that is fucking sick.
Yep. So she was 38 years old. Geraldine's own father was not permitted to visit her at the Healthy Living Clinic.
Oh my God.
Roche's treatment for leukemia was grape juice and organic food. Geraldine died in the clinic a week later. Roche told his followers that he had gone into her room and kissed her and she had awakened from death, but that in the end, you know, and I quote, when God wants people, he just takes them. It was Geraldine's time, end quote. And that is just the pull that this man had over so many people. Every single person who spoke to him thought that he was good. And this is a, like, the one line that runs the whole way through this story is that people thought that he was innocent. There is a point in the story where the media is protecting him.
What?
It, oh my, I, okay. I wanted to rip out all of my hair. All right. So, soon his delusions grew further and he was convinced that the world was going to end in February of 1979. He said that God spoke to him and wanted him to protect himself and his followers from the end of times. So he moved his people from Quebec to a mountainside that he named Eternal Mountain. It was here that Thériault disclosed to the group his visions of the future. He told the group that the world would end on February 17th, 1979, amid a storm of boulder-sized hail, earthquakes, and lightning. They, the commune, would become God's chosen people, but only if they made the righteous life for themselves in the scrub of these Appalachian foothills. Thériault, of course, would be their guide. They needed shelter, and Roche instructed his followers to build the, quotes, town. It took all summer for the followers to build a large commune like a building. Of course, because of Roche's stomach pains, this kept him from working with the rest of the group. When it was all finished, he rewarded the members with new Old Testament names. He named himself Moses.
Ugh, gross.
Yeah. Blech. He also, there was a lot of like letters and stuff that were published after all of this kind of came out where the members of the group would call him Poppy and they would call Giselle Mommy, like M-A-M-Y or M-A-M-I.
Yeah, the French for mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is just gross and weird.
Unsavory at best.
He declared all marriages in the group void, except for his own.
What?
Of course. He decided that all women were now married to him.
Oh, I'm sure Giselle had a field day with that.
Typical.
Yeah.
So now abuse becomes very prevalent in the group. It was an everyday occurrence. His wife, okay, this is, it gets bad. Just trigger warning.
Okay.
His wife Giselle was punched in the face for asking too many questions. They would be forced to stand naked in the snow for hours. Their food was rationed so heavily that most of the group was malnourished. If someone fell asleep during one of his sermons, he would hit them over the head with a club.
Oh. Okay.
Yep. One of the women began talk of leaving. He grabbed an axe and told her husband to cut off one of her toes. When he refused, Roche taunted him and said that in order to be a real man, you have to be able to teach your woman a lesson.
I fucking hate it. I hate it.
Yeah, it's... This guy is, has a special place in hell. Like, a very special place, like, on a bed of nails. He said that if he refused, Roche would cut off all of her toes. So, husband can cut off one, or Roche will cut off all of them. So, because of this, like, false dichotomy where they believe that there's only two options here, instead of, like, a third option that's
where,
like,
you go away.
Yeah, they just leave. The husband ended up cutting off one of her toes. Sorry. February 17th came and went. With no second coming.
Uh-huh.
Surprise, because we're all here.
Right. And then they're like, oh my God, I did my math wrong. It's actually...
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Okay. When his followers started questioning him, Roche simply explained that God's timeline and our timeline are just not the same. We're in different time zones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, mountain and central.
Yeah. But basically, the second coming would still come any day now. So you need to be subservient to me just for that second coming.
It's coming.
Yeah. It'll we just don't know when.
No. God works in mysterious ways.
In 1980, a man named Guy Veer joined the group. He was a homeless man, and he was mentally unstable, and they told him that he could stay in a shed on the outskirts of the community.
Okay.
He was basically treated like a slave.
Okay.
One of his jobs as a slave was to look after some of the children. Yep.
Okay. Just putting a stranger in charge of the kids, that's fine.
Well, the thing is, he would look after the three children that were not Roche's. Because Roche referred to these three children as the animals.
What? Because he didn't father them?
Yes.
Okay. I'm depressed.
I'm really sorry. You probably need to sip about it.
Okay.
There's Samuel, who is 2, Simon, who is 2, and Miriam, who is 4.
Oh my God, they're babies.
They're little babies. And I keep saying that this gets bad, but it just keeps getting worse.
Oh my God.
So everything I say from here on out is just a trigger warning. Like, if you are triggered by any kind of violence toward another human, turn me off.
Okay, but I'm triggered and I'm sitting here in my house.
You signed up for this.
I know. Okay, go.
All right. One night, Guy was watching the children and Samuel wouldn't stop crying. Guy punched the child in the face multiple times. The next day, Guy told Roche what had happened, and they looked at Samuel. His face was swollen, as were his genitals. Roche decided that he needed to lacerate his penis with a pair of scissors in order for the urine to flow out. The next morning, Samuel was found dead, and they buried his body near the edge of the compound. Yep. Every small infraction that Guy made resulted in severe punishment. At one point, he was tried for a crime, and they actually created a judge jury.
Oh, they had a judicial system.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
Yep. Roche, you remember how I said that he had 2 kids from his previous marriage?
Yeah.
One of these boys joined the commune at 12 years old.
Oh my God.
And he was on the jury at 12.
Great.
Yep.
Nothing you can trust more in this world than a 12-year-old boy.
Named Roche Jr.
Ugh.
Poor kid. He didn't stand a chance. Mm. So he was tried for a crime and the judgment was castration.
Oh.
So Roche actually convinced Guy to sign an agreement giving his consent to be castrated. He said that this would stop his headaches and would stop his never-ending masturbation.
Oh, which, never ending.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't have a penis anymore.
There's nothing to masturbate.
Yep.
Was he... did it say what he was on trial for?
Yes.
Is it what I think it is?
What do you think it is?
I don't like to say the words.
Oh, trial?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
He was on trial for... I think hitting the child.
Oh, okay.
I think that's what it was for.
Killing the kid.
Basically, yeah.
Okay, got it.
I think. But there were many infractions that Guy did that were small, petty things.
That they
blew way out of proportion.
Okay.
So they castrated him. And Roche felt that Guy Veer was now a security risk. But he would beat him regularly to the point where he felt like he couldn't get away. He would have other members stab him multiple times until he was nearly dead. And then when he was bleeding profusely, he would call them off. Finally, Guy ended up fleeing the compound and told the police about Samuel, except that he lied and said that the child died after being kicked by a horse. So the police raided the commune and they found Samuel's remains. The coroner found that the members of the commune were responsible for Samuel's death. Terrio was arrested and denied bail. A lot of other members were arrested as well and got lesser charges. This is that false bottom I was telling you about.
Yeah. It seems like the police are there now. The police
Everything
are supposed to help.
It's gonna be okay.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Doesn't really seem to work out that way.
A lot of pages left.
I see a thick stack over there.
Sorry.
That stack is dummy thick.
The trial lasted 9 months, and most of the members of the commune that were not arrested actually moved closer to the city to be closer to their leader. So they, like, rented apartments and shit.
Excellent. Cool.
Roche was sentenced to 2 years in prison, 3 years probation on each of the two charges that he was dealt, and they were going to be served concurrently, which means at the same time.
Yeah.
He was transferred to the Oransville Detention Center in Quebec City. The authorities went to the commune and tore that bitch down.
Hell yeah.
They burnt it to the ground.
Love Canadian, but the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
Like, I can just picture in my head, like, bulldozers. Like, you better give it one more go. Make sure it's really down.
You better really give it the old one, too, there.
Right.
Come on, pal.
So I have in my notes, you think that this would be the end, but surprise, it's not. Mm. Roche was released from prison in February of 1984. The group wanted to stay together in the city, maybe rent an apartment, but Roche had other ideas and took the group to a place called Burnt River, Canada. No one in that area had any idea what the group was about, and they regarded him as eccentric, but hardworking. This is when, like, the media was like, it couldn't have been that bad. That child probably died of an accident. Like, they're being persecuted because they live a different lifestyle than we do.
No, this is not the Amish.
No. It. But the media just was like, we're turning this into another Jonestown. Like,
oh.
They.
Well, I guess this would be like around.
It was right around that time.
Yeah.
So they built a new building, and while Roche didn't help again, he watched the group build and realized that they looked like worker ants and named his commune the Anthill Kids.
I hate that so deeply.
So hard, I hate it. In January of 1985, one young mother took her 5-month-old infant and put him in a wheelbarrow and took him outside. It was 14 degrees Fahrenheit, and very shortly, the baby had died. The baby was disliked by Roche, and he abused the baby regularly. The mother thought this was an act of mercy for the infant to keep him out of Roche's reach.
How do you abuse a 5-month-old baby?
And this was one of his children.
What? He fathered it?
Yeah.
What a...
Ooh. Okay.
I'm really putting this glass of wine down fast.
Yeah,
this
started drinking pretty quickly because I knew that I was going to have to tell you this horrible, horrible story.
This is... Mm-hmm. Need a really quick breather.
Yep. This is about when I went up and, like, got up, walked around, cuddled with my kitten.
Yeah. I feel like we need to, like, tell, like, a joke or something.
I mean, now's the time.
I only have a fun fact.
Okay. Give it to me. What's a fun fact?
Your nipples are older than your teeth.
Okay.
That's the only thing I had.
I love it. Thank you.
You're welcome. I feel like we needed that this time.
Yeah, yeah. Did you know that the perfect nude lip color is the same color as your nipples?
I heard that, but listen, the last time I pulled out my nipples in Ulta, I got yelled at, so I couldn't...
They didn't like the little, like, casual nudity that you were trying to get.
Yeah, no, not at all. Yeah.
Yeah, but if a man were just to pull out his nipple in the middle of Ulta, people would just be like...
But now it's fine.
Her.
You're perfect beige 02 by Tarte.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. A little levity. On we go.
Yeah. All right. So we only have 1.5 pages left. It is 1.5 pages of pretty fucking terrible.
Okay, great.
The least liked of the women, a woman named Marcy, was permitted to leave the campground because she just wouldn't stop complaining.
That'd be us.
She was like, I hate it here.
This is whack.
Yeah. So they were like, okay, leave. Like, they didn't want her there anymore. So she took 2 of her children, but she was forced to leave her oldest daughter, who was nearing puberty, because she was supposed to be Roche's next wife.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah.
What cult leader doesn't love a prepubescent girl?
I mean, all of them. So Morrissey went to the authorities and Child Protective Services, or Canada's version of that, and told them about the horrors happening on the compound. They came in and took all of the children to their to foster homes, and soon they started exhibiting disturbing behavior that made everyone around them realize the extent of the abuse.
Oh, God.
When the children were asked about their lives on the commune or compound, more horrifying details emerged. But these children had rotted teeth. They were malnourished. Just really, really horrible stuff. And Roche's reach was far and wide. So I don't have this in my notes, but I'll tell you this. The there were two people within like the CPS authority system that were in Roche's thrall. And they convinced everyone else that these children should be returned.
No!
Yeah.
No.
So they published a report that these children should be returned. At the end of the day, they were overruled by
the good guys. The old gods and the new gods. Yeah. Thank them all.
But yeah, there were people within the CPS system.
Oh my God. He just cast like a wide net.
He was a networker. There were a lot of times that he would travel from Quebec to the United States and talk to some of our most well-known cult leaders. So he got in with the FLDS, the Fundamental Church of Latter-day Saints, which I will cover them eventually, or one of us will, but he would talk to that leader. He talked to a couple other cult leaders. And even some of these other cult leaders were like, man, you whack.
Listen,
if other cult leaders are like, dude, you gotta dial it back.
If Waco is like, you're doing too much.
Right.
You better settle down.
Just like, chill.
Bruh.
All right. So,
fuck.
Okay. Roche would take the children and buy their clothes, nail them to trees, and have other children throw stones at them.
Oh my God.
Like, not like pebbles, like throw stones at them until the children were nearly dead.
Yeah, biblical stoning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are more really, really horrible things that I'm leaving out, but I just want to say, like, throw this man in the trash. And then
throw the whole man out and start over.
On fire.
Hello, whole man disposal? Yes, I'd like a pickup. Yes, the whole man.
Yes, the whole one. So here's just a short list of horrors that was also happening on the campground.
What, was this not the short and long list of horrors already?
No. No, this is the short list.
Okay.
There was a lot that I left out that I was like, well, there's like a laundry list. Like, if I kept every single thing in,
We'd be here for 3 hours.
We would be here for 3 hours and it would just be one horrible, horrible thing after another. He would have his followers smash each other in the legs with sledgehammers. He would tie up members and have them pluck out all of their hair, including their pubic hair.
Oh my God.
He would beat them, tie them up, and cut them with shards of glass. He once threw a knife at one of his wives and cut her leg deeply. He poured boiling water into the wound, and when it became infected, he filled the wound with salt, olive oil, and spruce gum.
That's not gonna help.
It actually... It got rid of the infection.
Did it?
And she healed up enough to be able to run into the woods, but she realized she couldn't survive on her own, so she went back.
Oh my God.
Yeah. There's a lot of stories about women leaving and then coming back because they didn't feel like they could live without him.
Well, because he has them so brainwashed.
Right.
Into thinking he's essential for their survival.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He made them eat excrement and dead mice. Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh, Taylor. Oh, this is the worst yet. This is the worst thing.
I know. And I was like, I was so close to being done with research and I was like, it's just getting worse. But I was up against a deadline and I couldn't really start over.
We got in
and
deep.
It got into my head and I felt like if it's in my head, it also needs to be in yours.
Okay. It's in my head.
And I'm sorry about our listeners.
We tried to tell you, like, in the beginning.
Like, that I'll put a trigger warning, like, on the description. And we'll put it, like, on our social media and stuff. Like, stop listening at, like, 30 minutes. Like, stop listening to Jenny's story if you can't handle really horrible shit. Like, I have, like, I'm looking at my notes and I have another trigger warning, like, written down that I'm just like, it's all a trigger warning. Like, it's all so bad.
We need to make it very apparently, like, abundantly clear when you start that this is not for the faint of heart.
No. Okay, so I have two women who went through two very horrific events that basically are his undoing.
Okay.
So hold on to that, and maybe just go ahead and take another drink.
I don't have a lot of wine left, so I hope we're close.
Yep. All right. So there is a woman named Solange. I love that name. Yeah. Well, her new Old Testament name is Rachel.
Ah, Rachel and Leah. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with that story?
A little bit, but okay. I don't think I could, like, regurgitate it to you.
We'll talk about it later. All right. I'm sure.
So, Solange began to feel ill in the fall of 1988, and Roche convinced her, that her liver was failing and that she would need an operation.
Oh, God.
He gave her a molasses enema.
Oh, my God. God.
Oh, I'm so sorry. He cut into her side and dug in with his bare hands. He ripped out some of her intestines and cut them out, and she died.
What? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to say the next part, like, really, really fast.
Okay.
He had a dream that he was pregnant with her soul. He believed that he could bring her back to life from the dead if he put her soul back inside of her. So he cut off her head and drilled a hole into her head and masturbated into the hole that was her head in hopes that she would come back to life. She didn't. He decided to cremate her.
Oh. Taylor, what the fuck?
It's so horrible.
You didn't tell me it was going to be this horrible. You just texted me. You texted me and you said, is what you're doing for cults really heaven? And you said, no, not really. And you said, okay, good. You didn't tell me. You didn't tell me!
I tried! I tried to warn you!
My eyes are watering.
These are nervous laughing. I'm not laughing at this. I'm just so sweaty.
I was just gonna say, I'm sweating. It's so deeply uncomfortable. Okay.
Nightmares. So many nightmares.
Okay, what's the next?
Okay, the next one is Gabrielle. He took her hand and he realized that one of her pinkies was stiff because at one point he had forced someone else to cut off part of her pinky.
Well, yeah, no shit.
So
she has an appendage. Of course it's stiff.
Yep.
Does he want a limber pinky nub? Is that what he wants? Fucking sicko?
So they were in the kitchen together and a lot of the other members of the commune had left for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And he stabbed a knife through her hand and pinned her to the table. This woman, I don't know, out of stupidity or out of bravery, she didn't scream. She didn't yell. She just sat there because she thought if she fought, it would get worse.
That like triggers like a response in people such as this.
Right. So he was very drunk, and so he just kind of left her there. And he came back about an hour later, and her arm had turned blue. He then tried to cut off the rest of her arm, but because he was so drunk, he was not able to do so, and so he got someone else to do it. Eventually, they succeeded, and by eventually, I mean after a long period of time.
Oh my God.
So after a few days, and she had run off and like tried to hide in the wilderness, but she was still bleeding and she knew that she would die in the wilderness. So she decided to come back.
Oh my God. A recurring theme.
Yep. He took a piece of metal and heated it to cauterize her wound. Again, he was drunk a few days later and he kept dropping the metal piece on her body before he was able to get the job done. Finally, she escaped for real in August of 1989, and although she made up a lie to cover up for her amputated arm, the authorities finally filed charges of aggravated assault against Roche. The police went to the compound. Everyone had fled by this point. Like, they knew she was going to the police. Some of the members had gone back to their families, as Roche's spell was finally broken. A handful of the women had stayed with him to stay loyal. Everyone that was arrested pleaded guilty to all charges laid against them relating to Gabrielle, this woman's amputation. Roche netted 12 years in prison, which I was surprised to learn the Canadian justice system calls that life in prison.
12 years?
Yeah.
What? No, send, let him pull this shit off in Texas. They will kill him three times over.
Right, or you'll get like 482 years in prison.
Yeah.
Like, I love when I read, like, he was sentenced to life in years plus 100 years.
I'm four
like,
life yeah. sentences. Yeah. Yes.
Like,
good.
I have a lot of beef with the American justice system sometimes, but that's not one of them.
I have beef with the American justice system right now, but I'll tell you, if somebody does something real heinous, we will make your life terrible. We will make
an actual circus of your trial.
Those are the only people that I can justify putting lifelong into a privatized, malignant prison system. Mm-hmm. Good. Go.
Yep.
Bye.
Yep.
Bye. Not solitary. Pot dealers.
No. No. Solitary confinement forever.
Mm-hmm. Smell you later.
Okay. So, his sentence was later reduced to 10 years because of Roche's genuine remorse and concern for the victim.
That's a,
in quotes,
hot steaming load of horse shit.
Mm-hmm. The police also pressed charges against Roche for first degree murder, but when the court found there was insufficient evidence that the murder had been premeditated, which we're talking about Solange, Terrio was committed to a trial for second degree murder. So basically they decided, like, because Terrio was like, I was trying to save her, that's not first degree murder.
Because he drunkenly tried to cauterize her wound?
This is the woman that he cut off her head.
Oh, no. No.
He got second degree murder for her. Oh, you're gonna have to get
I'm
up.
I'm sorry. We need to stand. I just have to stand. I'm so sorry.
Head between the knees? I only have, like, one more paragraph, I promise.
Okay, go.
Okay, so he was committed to a trial for second-degree murder. Roche's lawyers made a deal that Roche would plead guilty to this charge if no further charges were brought against him. The shiny bright spot in this is that the cult leader was murdered by his cellmate, Matthew Gerald McDonald.
A real modern day hero.
McDonald stabbed him in the neck with a shiv and afterwards walked up to a prison guard and said, that piece of shit is down on the range. Here's the knife. I sliced him up.
Hell yeah. Matthew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Terrio was 63 years old and that doomsday cult was finally over.
I'm nauseous, I'm sweating, I'm enraged, I'm a little mad at you, personally.
I will do better next time in warning you if I have something this off.
Listen, here's the thing. I'm mad at myself as like a hardened, like I can talk about like demons and unsolved murders. All it takes a lot to get under my skin. Like, I find John Wayne Gacy fascinating.
Same.
This is an entirely different level of depravity.
He's a sadist.
I don't know if there's a story out there that is worse than this.
I don't know if there's a story out there that we're capable of telling that is worse than this. And truly, a week ago when we decided we were going to do cults today, I like Googled like top 10 cults in North America. And I was like, okay, yeah, like Waco, Heaven's Gate, like
all the ones that we know.
All the ones that we know and all the ones that have so much information because so many people cover them and talk about them.
Because they're the darkest of the dark.
Right. Like I can't cover that in an hour.
No.
Like
we're going to have to do like a mashup episode for those big hard hitters.
So I wrote down Roche Terrio, like scribbled it in my notebook and was like, I'll come back to that. And so yesterday I was like, I need to research my cult. And I found a lot of my research on another podcast that I highly recommend called Zealot.
Ooh.
And all she does is cults.
Okay.
Her name is Jo and she is Australian, which makes her very fun to listen to. But she did this and I was like on a walk and I was listening to it as like my first like kind of foray into research. And I was just like, I would have to stop like mid walk and be like,
check and see if somebody's behind you.
Right. And be like, oh no. Oh no. Oh no.
It takes a lot for somebody with, like, and I hate to admit to it, but, like, I have a hardened heart to the world. I do.
You're the one that's always like, Taylor, your heart is so hardened. You need to have more empathy for people.
What that is... Well, I don't sound like that.
First of all.
Two, I just, that almost brought me to tears. Like, it's, ew, I'm grossed out. Can we go open another bottle of wine?
Yeah.
I need to, like, wrap this up. I'm not okay.
Yeah, we need to, like, decompress for a minute. I hope that whoever is still here, honestly, I hope there's not a lot of you, because this is really horrible.
Taylor, in the future, put this at the beginning of the episode.
Okay. I'll transplant this
at the beginning of the episode, that I really need whatever person is listening to this to know that this is the darkest that humanity can get. And it's disturbing and it's not okay. And you're going to lose sleep and it's going to make your stomach turn. And really, if you're sensitive, maybe skip past this.
There's a point when I was like, we talk about some dark stuff in this podcast, but a lot of the things that we've talked about that have been dark have been, like, ethical questions around religion, or demons, or supernatural,
or like political
things. But, like, this human existed, and he did horrible things.
There's no, because I feel like we have, like, a thing where we can, like, implant, like, jovial and humor into really dark, terrible things. There is not one scrap of salvageable material in this story.
No. The only thing that's salvageable is another inmate murdered him and was just like, here you go.
Like, I want to give him, like, a Medal of Honor.
I agree. 100%. Like, thank you for taking this awful fucking human out of the world and not doing it in, like, a, you're just gonna go sleep night for a little while. Like, no.
Make,
like,
him suffer.
Make him bleed. Which sounds really terrible, but that's all right.
Well, but they... You didn't just listen to the episode that we just listened to.
No.
Or, well, you did, but
make it bleed.
Stabby stab, stab, stab.
Stab, stab. Go follow us if you're still here.
Follow us on the Sochmeads. Twitter, a little bit grim one.
Instagram, a little bit grim pod.
Facebook, a little bit grim
podcast. You can rate us if you like us. If you don't like us, don't do anything.
Don't rate us on this episode. There are other ones. There are others.
Yeah, go find another one.
You delivered that excellently, by the way. But thanks. My God.
I apologize now. So,
goodbye.